experiences of women and encouraging other women to engage more substantially in science and technology. The women you see before you are trailblazers in many fields of science and technology in their home agencies and in their home countries, and it's an honor for all of us to have you here. Our goal is to encourage the worldwide and mind-by-mind change that is needed to ensure that women are as actively engaged in the science and technologies of the future as their male counterparts. We represent different countries, different institutions, different fields, and different professions, but we all recognize the potential of science and technology to provide for a better future. We recognize that to innovate, to understand and accelerate the developments of new solutions to the global challenges that confront us, we must, everyone, especially women, we must all come to the table. Engaging young women early in science, technology, engineering, and math fields or STEM education, supporting them through meaningful mentor relationships, and encouraging the development of family-friendly policies and practices are vital next steps. Here in the United States, we're proud to have a president who's made a clear commitment to restoring science to its rightful place. President Obama sees engaging young people and underrepresented groups, including women, in the pursuit of science, technology, engineering, and math education and careers as essential to America's future and to its prosperity. And across the administration, STEM education is a priority, from Race to the Top, which focuses states on improving math and science standards, to the National Aeronautics and Space Administration's Summer of Innovation, which provides grant money to bring NASA-themed content to middle schoolers, to the Department of Energy's mentoring program, which has launched just this past year in March. The program connects women engineers and scientists throughout the department with female undergraduates in the DC area. And these are just a beginning. We also hosted the very first White House Science Fair. For weeks afterwards, the president couldn't stop talking about Amy Chow, the 16-year-old who designed a device that uses light to kill hard-to-reach cancer cells while leaving the healthy cells untouched. And each year, the president recognizes extraordinary individuals outside the federal government who have demonstrated remarkable abilities as mentors in the fields of science, engineering, and math. Among the chief qualifications of the roughly 15 annual recipients of the Presidential Award for Excellence in Science, Math, and Engineering Mentoring is demonstrated success in engaging underrepresented groups, including girls, in these technical fields. And finally, we're addressing the challenge of creating institutional environments that are attractive to and support women in all stages of their careers, especially recognizing the need for greater workforce flexibility, something we all know, that balance of life and work that is particularly challenging for women. These are just some of the US government examples. Crossing our borders, we must share our ideas and our practices and support one another as we work together to empower future women scientists. Tackling these problems is going to require the work of many collaborators from every nation. So before beginning our discussion, I'd like to take a moment to introduce the senior US administration officials who have taken the time out of their schedules to be here today. Dr. Cora Merritt, just last month, was confirmed by the U.S. Senate as Deputy Director of the National Science Foundation. She also served as Acting NSF Director for a while and as the Assistant Director for NSF's Education and Human Resources Directorate. In this post, she led the directorate to support NSF's mission to achieve excellence in U.S. science, technology, engineering, and mathematics education at all levels in both formal and informal settings. Her background is in the social, behavioral, and economic sciences. Dr. Margaret Hamburg, to my left, is the Commissioner of the Food and Drug Administration, having been confirmed in May of 2009. She graduated from Harvard Medical School and completed a residency in internal medicine at what is now New York Presbyterian Hospital Weill Cornell Medical Center, before going on to become the Commissioner of the New York City Department of Health and Mental Hygiene. Prior to her appointment, Dr. Hamburg also served as the senior scientist for the Nuclear Threat Initiative, a foundation dedicated to reducing the threat to public safety from nuclear, chemical, and biological weapons. Dr. Marcia McNutt, at the end of the table here, is the director of the U.S. Geological Survey, located in the Department of the Interior.
She's responsible for leading the nation's largest water, earth, biological science, and civilian mapping agency, and its mission to provide the scientific data that enable decision makers to create sound policies for a changing world. Prior to her appointment, Dr. McNutt served as the president and chief executive officer of the Monterey Bay Aquarium Research Institute. She holds degrees in physics and oceanography. Dr. Maki Dilworth, to my right here, is also of the National Science Foundation, is the director of the Office of International Science and Engineering. She has served NSF for over 20 years, most recently as the acting deputy assistant director for the Mathematics and Physical Sciences Directorate, but also as the head of the Tokyo Regional Office. Her background is in plant physiology and biochemistry. Again, I'd like to thank these women for participating today. And at this point, I'd like to invite our international visitors and Sharon Renko, Senior Advisor to the Assistant Secretary for Oceans, Environment, and Science at the Department of State, to introduce themselves. Over the past few days, they've been participating in a symposium at the department called Changing Mindsets to Promote Women in Science, and I hope they'll provide some thoughts on how the discussions they've had might inform or be informed by their own experiences as women scientists, and what are your takeaways, and what are you going to bring back home. So thank you. Sharon?
Thank you, and thank you so much. And on behalf of the women who are here, it's a great honor and privilege to be in this room with all of you. I thought I would say just a word about the symposium that we had yesterday and how we got there. And I'd like to give reference to the Commission on the Status of Women meeting. The 55th session was held in February, and it focused on empowering women and girls through science. And so at that meeting, we brought together two agendas, one gender equality and one the science agenda. So as we know, as we're going to empower women, we need to train them and think about girls and pipeline issues. At the CSW meeting, we announced that we would have a symposium to talk about best practices. And how we can change mindsets of institutions, of governments, and of people themselves in order to promote women and girls in science. We had a very productive discussion yesterday, and I know that these women are very eager to tell you about some of the ideas that surfaced. So let me stop there and turn to my right and ask Ana Lucia to introduce herself.
Good morning. It's a great pleasure to be here. It's a great honor also, a great opportunity. My name is Ana Lucia. I'm coming from Brazil. I work at the Ministry of Science and Technology, and specifically at International Cooperation Department of the Ministry. I'm not a specialist on gender issues, but I'm getting very motivated by everything that I have heard here on these days, and I'm ready to give my best to promote our cooperation in this field. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Luciana Serrão. I work at the Brazilian Embassy here in Washington. I'm the head of the Sector of Science and Technology.
Good morning to all of you. My name is Ann Samsawalha. I'm from West Bank. I am pharmacology toxicology, and I am currently the dean for the College of Medicine, the pharmacy, and also the founding director for the Poison Control Center.
I'm Sudha, and I work with Dr. Emma Swaminathan, belong to the Emma Swaminathan Research Foundation in Chennai. And I think I came here, or probably was selected, because of the work I have done in the last 16 to 17 years in gender science and technology, established the first women's biotechnology park in Chennai along with the Department of Biotechnology, work very closely with the Ministry of Science and Technology in India to see how and policy changes can be brought in to improve the visibility of women in science and what science can do for our rural women. And it's a pleasure to be here among great people like you. Thank you.
My name is Shireen Rahil. I am an orthodontist. I come from Jordan. I work in the private sector in Amman, the capital. Without science, I wouldn't have had the guts to talk to anybody. And I went to science because I was very shy, up to the point that I found that I can do a lot and be inspired and inspiring to others. So, thank you.
I am Mace Mohammed. I'm an assistant lecturer at University of Technology in Baghdad. And also, I've just finished a year as a scholar at Caltech, California Institute of Technology, with the help of Iraqi Women Foundation, Fellowship Foundation. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Salome Mtayoba from Tanzania. I'm an associate professor at the Sokoine University of Agriculture. My discipline is animal science, but I'm at Novus International, Missouri for 9 months. I'm doing a research attachment on animal feeds. Thank you.
Good morning. I'm Rubina Shaheen, and I'm studying atmospheric chemistry. And today I'm representing OIC's Commission on Science and Technology. And in order to express my views about the meeting, I would like to borrow one of the very famous statements from Joseph Priestley. Once he was writing his first book on the history of science and electricity, he went to visit Benjamin Franklin in one of the coffee house in 1776. And he had his words: "The time I had the pleasure to spend in the company of these eminent scholars appeared in review like a pleasing dream, and I ardently wish a repetition of it. For me to get this experience from all the scholars and to implement it back in my country, that's one of the golden opportunity I had. And thank you so much for having us over here. And I also would like to thank NSF for having advanced program, because I'm a scholar at UC San Diego and I really benefited from that program. And I would also like to thank Dr. Carrie Ann Jones, senior assistant secretary of state, as well as Dr. Aaron Koff for his all the efforts to bring us over here. Thank you.
Good morning. I'm Asanata Milogo from Burkina Faso. I'm the Secretary General of the Ministry of Scientific Research and Innovation. I'm a biochemist, microbiologist. Thank you.
My name is Epifania Kimaro. I come from Tanzania, and a research scientist in background in the discipline of entomology and parasitology, and I'm the Director General of Tropical Pesticides Research Institute in Tanzania. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Rawia Tahrir. I am from Iraq. I'm here under IWF program, Iraq Women Fellowship Foundation, and I have a MSc in computer science. There is word said, drops of water create way through stone, not because it's strong, but because it's continuous. So we are here, and we are still going forward to satisfy our target. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Dr. May Qasir. I'm from University of Technology, Baghdad. And I won a 1 year fellowship at UCSD from the same organization, IWFF, Iraqi Women Foundation Fellowship. And I have a PhD in industrial engineering. My thesis was on waste management and protection of environment among factories, Iraqi factories. Thank you, and thanks for this good opportunity to meet all of you. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Fatuba. I'm from Gambia. I work at the Medical Research Council unit in the Gambia. I'm here representing the U.S. Embassy in the Gambia because they believe a lot needs to be done in my country in order to promote women and girls in science and technology. And I hope when I go back, I'll be able to sensitize more women to participate more in science.
I am Betiku Omolola Comfort. I'm from Nigeria. I work at the University of Obafemi Awolowo University in Lefe. I'm presently in Bosman because I'm a fellow of the African Women in Agricultural Research and Development. So the award fellowship has given me the opportunity to be in Bosman at the Bosman Fish Technology Center in Montana State. So there I'm to carry out a fish nutrition research work, so that after gaining the skill, I can go back to my country and impart in aqua feed and reduce the cost of this feed in the country so that I can boost aquaculture, and most especially to improve the animal protein intake of the people, especially the rural dwellers, and to work against food insecurity so that we can boost the GDP from aquaculture industry.
Thank you so much, all of you. I wondered if I could start on this side of the room and ask you what it was that brought you into, encourage you to join the science and technology fields, and what you have taken away from your past couple of days that would help encourage other women and girls to pursue fields in science.
For myself, I always liked challenge, and I liked areas that are considered to be tough. So going into pharmacy as my first degree, that was kind of satisfying the need I have for science. I loved science since I was a kid. I used to get full grades in math and science at school. And then in graduate school, I liked toxicology because nobody else is specializing in this field in my country. So I am now the only toxicologist they have. And then I also established the first poison center that we have. So it is I think it is something built in me that I always would like to be the first and to be a leader. So I did go through a lot of challenges. It is the culture that we have and all the restraints on women in most of the countries in the Middle East were facing me and were challenging me. But I could face all those challenges and move on to the positions that I have now. And I am now a very inspiring model for my students, being the dean. So I have lots of students. I also teach. I love teaching. I teach toxicology. And my, especially the girl students, find me a good inspiring model for them, because most of the other faculty members are males. And so being here, I feel it's a great opportunity. I have seen many women who were successful, who had faced a lot of challenges, yet those challenges did not make them stop from pursuing what they wanted to do. So that has given me a push forward to move on and hopefully start changing the rules and changing the mentality that we have into giving women more chances to be part of the decision maker and the government, hopefully.
Thank you. Luciana or Ana Lu?
Well, actually, I should make a correction. My background is in law. I'm a lawyer. We have a master's in law. But I chose to work with science and technology at the embassy because I do realize that as a diplomat, I became a policymaker. And science and technology are the new frontier, you know, even more so for countries like Brazil, India, and so forth, who are fighting not only against poverty, but also aiming at development, social development, and inclusion. With the right policies in place, with the right cooperation, we can move forward. I think that's what led me to choose the field, in spite of my area.
Well, I have a scientific background. I graduated in biology. I did my master in botanic, plant physiology. I did my PhD in plant molecular biology. So I have been in research and in the academy until I was 35 years old. So I have all my history was in the academy doing my PhD. But maybe I am a good example of those women that because of the burden of the scientific career, sometimes it's too much, you know, if it's difficult to conciliate family, children with a scientific career where you have to dedicate a lot of your energy, there is a lot of competition. So when I got the opportunity to get into the government, to work in the administration, I took that opportunity. I want to say that I'm not unhappy with that at all. I am very happy doing what I do. And I think I can, I'm working in the Ministry of Science and Technology, so even if I'm not doing research anymore, I am working to promote it. So I'm very happy with what I'm doing.
In this second group, we heard from Shireen about what brought you into science. I'd like to understand what keeps you in science, and what do you see are the from the last couple of days that you've learned that you can take back home to ensure that you are bolstered in your position.
Uh,
I love to share this. I started off as a microbiologist, and even yesterday I shared the same thing. It was in 1996 when Dr. Swaminathan requested me to, you know, convene a meeting of the women scientists in the Asia-Pacific region. And one of the recommendations which came out was that we have so many of our girls in life sciences, and they disappear. And when they want to come back, there are no re-entry options. And this was in 1996. And he requested me to see if we can set up a biotechnology park as entrepreneurial activities for women who want to come back into science. I never knew that it was going to be a big challenge, because the bankers were not very supportive of the idea, because it was a biotechnology park, and that too for women. So they felt that there were two negatives in this. So it was a great challenge. And there were many times when I questioned, why did I get into this? But then I think at the end of it, today, looking back, when the secretary of the Department of Science and Technology came to the park, he said that the idea was a decade too early for you to set up a park for women. And it is this challenge which keeps me going, you know. And the comparison between microorganisms and women, I have always loved to share, is that, you know, both of them provide the necessary resilience in an ecosystem. While the focus has always been on plant sciences, I've always questioned as a young researcher why we need a genetic modification of microorganisms when they know how to change to the environment. And especially for women, I think we need to do those certain adjustments to carry on, just like the microorganisms for the young kids out here. I think that's the message I would like to give. As long as we can keep going, adjusting to our surroundings, but not giving up your values on which you work on, I think science can be very productive and very engaging. Thank you.
Okay, it's me. Okay, for me, what has kept me in science is that what I'm doing is beneficial to the community. As I said, I'm an animal scientist. I graduated with a PhD in poultry science. So back home, poultry and the other animals are very important. So when I continue researching onto feeds, which is the most important, most expensive item when you are producing poultry, it costs about 70%. So when I look into other feed ingredients which farmers can use and feed the animals, and then take it back to the farmers or to the feed industry, it is an asset to keep me in poultry. That's why I remain in science for that long. Thank you.
Thank you. Yes.
When I was studying back in Pakistan, I always dreamed that I would like to be all other women who I see on the TV. So I aspired to get my degree from abroad. Once I came to Europe, I had to learn French, and it was a challenge, but I did it. And after doing my master's, I got scholarship from Germany, and again, I had to learn German. And I did it, and I got magna cum laude. That's very rare, any student get magna cum laude in their PhD. So for me, it was a dream that I was able to fulfill it. And finally, when I came over here in United States, for me, it was entirely a different cultural setting. But I'm thankful that Advance had a program that how to navigate in their academic career, and I learned a lot. And from that point, I realized, no, for me, it's important to return it back. There must be so many girls in Pakistan who are dreaming how they can come to the next step, and I keep going back to Pakistan, and I'm happy to be over here and learning from all these scholars that how can I implement whatever I learned over here back in my country, because we have a big problem where the women in the university, they are almost 50%, but in practical life, when there is any job, there are not enough women to be a role model. And I don't want to be a role model, but I want to set an example that if you have strength to, or you can achieve your goals.
Thank you.
Okay. In my country, Burkina Faso, at least 80% of the population rely on traditional medicine. because the medicine is available and very efficient for more of them, for most of them. So in our Institute of Research on Health Sciences, we do toxicology of those plants because some are very efficient, but they are toxic. We do chemistry, sorry, my English is not very good. We do chemistry, and I am a biochemist. We want to know what is the composition of most of those plants we use for medicine. And also we test pharmacological effects of those plants. Since most of the population rely on these medicinal plants, and the country abounds in those plants, and they are efficient, and they are available. So I know that we have a lot to do, a long way to do, because developed countries are no more interested in most of our sicknesses, our diseases. It's not anymore a preoccupation for them. For instance, the traditional medicine used to fight against infectious diseases, and we have a lot of infectious diseases in this country. So we have a lot to do to isolate active principles from our medicinal plants to formulate syrups, tablets for our population at a lower cost and very efficiently affordable for them. Excuse my English, it's not. Okay, thank you.
Oh, your English is excellent, thank you.
Okay, myself as a young girl, I was inspired by my father because he was working in the field of agriculture to enter into the field of agriculture. And at home, my father was keeping animals. And every day at home, I was challenged to see the welfare of the animals. So when I got into the field of agriculture, I thought that I could become a researcher, especially looking into the researching on the management of vectors of public health and veterinary importance. So I ended up researching on the doing research in relation to the management of tsetse flies, which cause sleeping sickness in human beings and nagana in animals, and also the ticks, which cause tick-borne diseases, and also the tick-borne relapsing fever, which is caused by the soft ticks. So with time, as I was going on with research, I came to find that I was a leader in the department, and I was facing several challenges, especially those related to managing the staff which were under me. So I was challenged to take an MBA, and once I finished my MBA, I just found myself being appointed into the directorship of the institute. I acted for 1 year and then I was confirmed. So I was challenged as a woman because in my institute we have women research scientists. So my challenge, I've stayed there for 1 year. So I find that I need to bring up the women under me so that they can have confidence in doing research and as well as developing their career paths so that they could become better leaders, and also they can also participate in policy making and as well as in leading teams which are under women. So that's what I have to share with you. And I thank the US department in my country which selected me to come up here so that I could learn and see how I can impact the knowledge which I've learned here to the women which are which are under me. So that's very, I really appreciate for that.
Thank you. The others?
Well, for me, I started as an analytical chemistry because I'm curious. I want to know everything and how it's happening this way. But when I started to study for my master's degree, I found that environment needs a lot of work in Iraq, and there is not very much scientists who are working on the environment in Iraq. And also teaching at the university and the joy of giving information for students and to see how their eyes light when you give them a new information or something they haven't known before. It's a great joy for me. Thank you.
For me, science was what made me continue learning is I wanted to be free. And I found that science makes me have power to do what I wanted, even to do even more than I thought I can do. So I continued studying and know more information about the world that I am part of. And since I live in a society which is very masculine and very the family and society controls so much the women, for me science was like, it's freeing me from, it's giving me knowledge to tell them that no, I know better. I know for myself what I want. So don't tell me what's better because I already found out. And the thing is, the science, it makes you want to learn more and find more. So now I am addicted to science and I feel I want to know more so I can make something new maybe in the world and something different that it could be normal in the future. Thank you.
Thank you. And for our last group, now we understand what has inspired people to get into science. How do you stay there? What keeps you going? And what have you learned in the last couple of days that you can take back with you to help you get even farther?
Yeah, your question refreshed my memory, and now I remember the picture when my father read newspaper and found Madame Curie Puri, and I was 7 years old when he called me and hugged me and said, "You will be better than this woman. I know, even you are small size, but you have good mind." And within time, when I grew up in Iraq, I found that science make me life, and science is way to peace. And each time I taught my student and work in a group, I told them, do you find how we are solve this bigger problem? Because we are work in a group, work as a friend, work with love. So each time science opened to me new world and opened to me new door, opened my heart to all people around the world. Thank you.
Since I graduated from my college, maybe 20 years ago, I was wondering if the human being has a missionary here, like, you know, to put something like a foot stamp in this life, and so everyone can benefit from this. So since that time, I try to study and get my PhD, master degree and then PhD, and I put one book for Iraqi industrial secondary school students, and I have 12 research, and I'm now making another research here at UCSD, and of course I benefit something, book information here, and skills also. I'm trying to take these skills and this information and what I learned here as a leadership, a women leadership, and a scientist also. I will take it back to my students, to my country, and to my fellow also. Thank you.
For me, I choose science since I was in high school, and then I just love it. And I was lucky after I finished school to be working at the Medical Research Council, and they sponsored me to do a diploma in biomedical science through the University of Westminster. So I was very lucky for that part. But you know, in my country, science is not very famous there. Most of the women and girls, they want to go for the easy subjects and then just finish with it and maybe get married or something. So a lot needs to be done in my country. At least now we have the School of Medicine and the University of Gambia, so things are changing, but a lot needs to be done, really. Yeah.
Thank you. While I was growing, we realized that in our schools, many of the science students were seen as the brilliant ones. And many of them, they carry on these big textbooks about science. The book is always very big. And many people believe that they are very brilliant because they read a big book. Many people were encouraged even to take up science. And taking up science as a subject then, you discover that many people that read this science, they get job easily because at times they go into profession like computer science, like medicine, so they get job. They are hotcake job. And I take up science. But what do we have today? Like what we have learned from our meeting, we discovered that the attraction on science is like fading away. We don't have more of remuneration. And people just feel like, why would you lie so much? And at the end of it, nothing comes out of it. So many people do not have that attraction to science like we do have in those days. And looking at the environment, like we have discussed from our meeting, for women, it's not remunerated very well, and the environment is not conducive for women. At the end of it, many of the women that we normally see in science before that you see them on the media, they are no more there. So there is more of a shift from science like we used to have in the olden days. But what has been keeping me is that despite all this, we still have some fellowships that are helping those people in science. For example, people from developing countries where there are no enough facilities. But when you have fellowship, like I have the African Women in Agricultural Research Fellowship to be in Bosman, it has given me the opportunity to see my colleague, to see some of these things. And one thing about the fellowship, it does not have age limit because it is for women. But those are the things that can keep people in science, that can encourage women. We must make it remunerated and more attractive like we used to have in those days, the science. Thank you.
Thank you so much. This is all very inspiring. And I wonder if we could turn to our senior officials from the administration, and I'd ask a similar question, which is, what inspired you into science? And have you overcome some barriers along the way? And what have you been doing to encourage women to, in your post, to encourage more women to engage in the science fields?
Amazon. The USGS is maybe unusual among federal agencies in that one of our roles in the federal government is that we do the science that leads to determining which species need to be listed as endangered species. And if you look at the leadership at the USGS, we're near to the point of having to list men as endangered species because two-thirds of the leadership of the U.S. Geological Survey right now are women. Our director, our deputy director, and 8 out of 12 of the leadership positions at the U.S. Geological Survey are women. And so you might ask the question, why is it that there are so many women in leadership positions at an agency like the U.S. Geological Survey? Well, it's kind of interesting, and I've been mulling over in my mind, why is it that so many women in this one field have risen to leadership positions? And I think it's basically the resilience of women. I treasure this little stack of Post-it notes that a friend of mine gave me years ago. They're little pink Post-it notes that say, "Of course I don't look as busy as the men. I did it right the first time." And basically, it's because I think women of my generation that have survived have done it because they basically avoided being trampled by the men back when we chose what field we went into. And if you go back and look at where was the right field to select back when I was in college, it was the geosciences, because what was happening? the plate tectonic revolution was sweeping through the earth sciences. And all of the old theories had to be thrown out, and the field was wide open. All of the old scientists were suddenly obsolete, and the field was wide open for new people with new ideas. And so I think many women went into this field because there was lots of opportunity. And I think that's why there are so many women in leadership positions and lots of opportunity for them now to be at the head of agencies like the USGS and also in university departments and in other areas in leadership positions. And I'm doing everything I can to encourage women to take these positions and let their voices be heard. Thanks.
Well, I suppose I would say I'm struck by the commonalities of experiences, of characteristics, because I think I share a number of these. As people have talked, it's been clear that one of the things that's so important is curiosity, just being curious, wondering about the world out there, the universe. It can be wondering about life and how does life take place. It can be wondering about the worlds we create through the social sciences and engineering, but it's that. And I don't think I can think of anybody, no female I know of, doesn't have curiosity. So one of the things becomes, how do we foster such curiosity? There is also the matter of confidence, and sometimes that can seem to be difficult to sustain when others might be questioning you. But I think from the people assembled here, that there is this kind of notion that you retain a level of confidence in yourself that becomes extremely important for what takes place. There is the determination. It's associated with confidence. And so there can be, when you ask, are there things where at points you say, oh, there are all sorts of discouragements. Oh, yes, I could go through a lot of those, but I won't. Because there is the continuation of saying, if I've got confidence, I'm determined to continue to overcome a number of barriers. And I think I was especially struck by the notion of service to others, that is what seems to me so significant, that many of us have said we undertake what we do with a sense of service, whether it is the teaching that we do, or when we've chosen to move into leadership positions, when we could have made other choices. But it was out of the idea that in being in those positions, saying I'm going to be in a governmental position, what can we do in service to others? What sustains you through the times? It's the kind of reaction, it's the kind of response, it's the kind of support that you get. I think of something that happened to me just a couple of weeks ago when a former student of mine sent me a note that told of a lecture that I had given some 20 years ago. I said, she remembered more about that than I ever did. But that kind of a thing just counts so much. So there's always the possibility of having enough of the feedback. And I end my comments by saying, and what helped sustain me is the kind of interaction that this kind of gathering represents. I'm inspired by what your experiences have been and by the fact that I know we're going to remain in touch because we have such shared interests. So thank you.
It's been a pleasure listening to you all as well. I'm a little bit different here that I was actually born and raised in Japan and came to the US to go to graduate school, and then I married an American man, so I stayed and been here over 40 years now. If I knew what I know now about the getting into science and all that when I came to the U.S. the first time, I probably wouldn't have gone into it. But I didn't know any better. I just I wanted to be different from the rest of the girls in my generation in Japan. The norm at the time was you graduate from college, then you marry. You work until you get married, then once you get married, then you stayed home. And I didn't like that. So I knew I wanted to continue a career in some way. The reason I chose science was maybe because I had a good mentor at the college that I went to. And I've been very, very fortunate to have a good mentor all the way along my life. Some of them were men, but once I started working for the National Science Foundation, I had a wonderful mentor who would just challenges me and gives me different assignments all the time. So I grew in that, and then this job at the National Science Foundation is not something that exists in, say, in Japan or many other countries. And you don't do research at the bench, but you do contribute to the advancement of science, research and education in the STEM field. So I love this job. And also the way I found that the best way to promote the international collaboration is through young people. I think one of the most successful examples of promoting international engagements are based on the programs that we allow students to experience different countries and the culture. And when you send young people to other countries and experience different culture, they form networks with their friends and colleagues at the same age, and then they last for a lifetime. And they come back with the completely different perspective. One of the students that, when I was in Tokyo, we hosted a group of U.S. Undergraduate students. They're all very young, rising sophomores. And at the end of the stay, they said that, you know, now I'm going to look at the foreign students in my lab differently. Now I know how they feel when they come to our lab. And so they not only learn foreign cultures, but they also learn about themselves and how to behave in their own home countries. So I really like to continue to promote exchange for the young people, international exchanges. So.
Thank you. I'll try to be brief because I know we have very little time remaining. I think I may be somewhat different than some of the others around the table in that I grew up in an academic community. My parents were both physicians, still are. They're based at Stanford University in California. So I grew up, everyone I knew practically was a scientist or a physician, or their parents were. So for me, the big question when I got to college and started my more independent studies was, do I want, in fact, to pursue science, or there's a whole world of other choices out there. But I found myself very much returning to science and pursuing a career in medical science because of many factors. One, the curiosity about the world, and to me, science is where there's just a continually unfolding set of interesting questions and challenges and opportunities, but most importantly because I wanted to work with people and to serve people and my community. Originally, I thought I would do academic medicine and teach and do research and take care of patients, but as I was a student, as a medical student, and then in my residency training in internal medicine, I watched the AIDS epidemic develop, and many of you in your countries, I'm sure, can appreciate the burden that disease brought to families and communities and to nations, and that the answer to addressing the challenge of HIV/AIDS and so many other problems that we face in science is not simply the application of science, but it's the application of science in a broader context that brings together many disciplines and engages people across different disciplines within science, but also other sectors of society. And that's when I made the shift into public health and into the kinds of leadership roles that I've had now, culminating as the Food and Drug Commissioner here in the United States government. To me, having mentors, for one thing, having a mother who showed me that you could be a physician, you could be a professor at an esteemed university, and you could have children, was inspiring, although I sometimes now accuse her that she made it look too easy. Having the sense of accomplishment and making a contribution has made an enormous difference, whether it was taking care of individual patients or addressing the health of entire cities and now the nation. And looking forward, I think the opportunities to work together as networks of women within a discipline or beyond to share common challenges. You were talking about the need to study botanicals in your country to better understand both the health promoting and the potential safety issues for traditional medicines that could be used. Well, we should be working together because we care about those issues too, and benefits for your people can be benefits for ours and vice versa. We live in a highly globalized world. I do believe that women have a unique contribution both because of our innate intelligence and skills, but also because of our way of working together. And I think that in the modern world in particular, it's the partnership, it's the willingness to look beyond yourself and your own interests to what will make a difference together, and the importance that I think we all place on not just thinking about ourselves, but thinking about the next generation through mentoring. There's so many opportunities to work together, so I'm very, very happy to be a part of this, happy that we're joined by students who truly are the next generation of leaders in a very exciting but challenging world.
Well, thank you all. I think we're probably going to run out of time, but I just wanted to reiterate a few things that we've learned here about what it is about women that bring us into science. One is to feel empowered. Another is to inspire. We like to lead. We like the sense of service. We like to build confidence. We like to work together. But then there are also some particular qualities about women, and I think we've seen around this table, as Marcia said, we are very resilient. Human beings, we are flexible, extremely flexible, I would have to say, in all of our things, and we just really do enjoy each other's company and like to build a spirit of women working together on behalf of building a better whole. I'd like to add one little personal note because I mentioned this yesterday to you all, and I'd like to say it again. Well, while we've come a long way, or as we say in this country, we've come a long way, I think also men have come a long way with us. And one of the things that is really inspiring to me in watching some of my colleagues in these challenging roles that we have, what also helps us is that we tend to have members of our family, men, daughters, sons, whomever, who really pitch in and make it all possible. It really is, as Secretary Clinton says, it does take a village. And we're all here because we've got a variety of villages behind us supporting us. And as you students will soon learn, that it's more than just yourselves, it's the village that you're part of that will really help bring you along. So thank you for being here today. And thank you for inspiring us for the rest of our days.